halfway through this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio, Facebook.com, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Curtis Pashelka. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Curtis. Have you recovered from that Game 4 epic triple overtime contest? I mean, it was a fantastic experience, I'm sure, to be there. You don't have to worry about deadline when the game ends at a little bit after 1 in the morning Central Time, right?
Right, exactly. I guess to a certain point where the people who work at the newspaper are kind of like, well, we'll see you. We'll talk to you later. They kind of go about their business. But no, it was. It was a fantastic game. First time I've had an opportunity to cover an overtime game, but never a double overtime or a triple overtime game. So a lot of fun. Obviously, a very loud building. And it was a great game. I think it just kind of showed how even these two teams are at this stage of the series.
Curtis, obviously a disappointing end to the game, particularly when the Sharks thought they had won the game on Joe Pavelski's goal in the first overtime. You know, your thoughts on that after, you know, sort of getting out of the fog of war of it all and, you know, having a clear head a couple days later. Do you think that the officials made the correct call in ruling no goal and goaltender interference on the play?
Well, I think by the letter of the law, it probably was the correct call. But I don't know. I mean, I think the NHL kind of overthinks it a little bit with some of these rules. It was, when you just boil it right down, it was just a great play. I mean, it was just, you made an athletic play just to kind of glove the puck down. It went off Rene's pad at that point. He got kind of pushed from behind a little bit from Gostad, and then he got knocked into to Weber, and that's kind of how he wound up right beside Rene. And then he kind of taps the puck over the line, with his stick before it crosses the line. So I think by the letter of the law, yeah, there was incidental contact. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I mean, shoot, it was just a great play. And maybe those plays kind of get rewarded sometimes. Maybe they don't. But it was definitely, I don't know if it was a turning point in that game, but certainly the Sharks are going to look back at that if they go on to lose this series and say, wow, I think that that might have been an opportunity for us to really take a stranglehold of the series here.
Curtis, San Jose was up in the series 2-0, and now they head back to San Jose. Series is tied 2-2, even though they had a very good chance going back to San Jose up 3-1 and able to close out the series in San Jose. What's your key for San Jose heading into Game 5? How do they take that 3-2 lead and avoid falling behind 3-2?
Well, I think number one is I think they want to try to find a way to slow down the Fisher line. Him, Neil, Colin Wilson, they've been really good, especially in Game 4. They seem to really, really put it together that game and gave the Sharks all kinds of problems. So I think it starts there, and then I think just kind of the basics, what everybody kind of talks about in each game, is just getting pucks and more traffic to the net when it comes to Rene. I think early on, in that game, in Game 4, the Sharks were a little bit tentative. They were a little bit hesitant, and they started to find their legs as the game wore on and started to play pretty well. But for them, they got to go. They got to go right from the start. They can't afford to fall behind 1-0 or 2-1 and expect to come back every time. They got to go ahead and grab the lead right from the start and try to keep the pressure on for a full 60 minutes, because Nashville's really good. I mean, they beat Anaheim for a reason, so you got to stay on top of them basically for the entire game.
Curtis, you look at the coaching, and we were talking about the Pavelski call earlier in the show, and just how Pete DeBoer, you know, is so calm behind the bench and really has done a great job with this team. How different is he than Todd McClellan before?
Well, I think there's a little bit of difference in personnel. And Todd was probably a little bit, yeah, like you mentioned, probably a little bit more emotional. Pete's a little bit more reserved, more, I don't know, I think he's just as intense, and I think he's just as competitive, but it maybe just shows it in a little bit different way. As far as coaching styles go, I know Todd was, especially when it came to the playoffs, was really big on matchups, really liked sort of you know, use that to his advantage when the Sharks had home ice. Whereas Pete is not totally, I mean, he's aware of them, but he's not, like, totally committed to them. Like, he doesn't have to. If he feels he has a third line out there against the other team's top line, or his third D pair against the other team's second line, he's not in a panic situation. He feels that those guys are able to get the job done. And that's just his coaching style. Like, you know, because he has a little, you know, has some faith in those guys. I wrote this morning that maybe that might just play into the Sharks' advantage if this is a seven game series, because, you know, I mean, let's face it, some of the Nashville's top players are really playing big minutes at this point. And tonight, I think, would be their 12th game in 23 days, and almost their 13th game in 23 days, because, you know, they basically, sure, you know, basically played two games on Sunday night there. So it was, you know, I think they're a little bit different styles in that respect, but, you know, bottom line is, I think they're both very good coaches. I think Pete has just struck a chord this year, got this team to buy into the way that he wants them to play.
Curtis Pashelka is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, you know, obviously they go back to game five tonight in San Jose. The series is tied at two games apiece. You know, from an outside observer's point of view, I would say that San Jose has probably been the better of the two teams in the first four games. Do you get any sense of disappointment in the Sharks locker room that they are here in this situation where it's now down to a best of three, even though they've been the better of the two teams through the first four games?
Well, they haven't expressed, I mean, I'm sure they're disappointed. Obviously, when you're up 2-0, you'd like to at least get a split on the road, come back 3-1, have it a chance to close it out. But honestly, I kind of think that they felt that this was going to be kind of a 6 or 7 game series, that they weren't going to come in here and quite have the same type of maybe advantage that they had against the Kings in the first round, where it was really evident to me that the Sharks were the better team. If you look at the series, this series has been, I think the Sharks probably played their best game in game four overall. At least after the first period, they started to play some of their best hockey. Obviously in game one, they had 5 goals in the third period, so you can't really argue too much with that. But I think it's, I don't see sense any panic right now from these guys. I think they've accepted the fact that this is going to be a long series. Sometimes you're going to get some bounces, but obviously tonight's game is critical. They can't afford to lose tonight and then have to go back to Nashville for game six. I think tonight, I don't know if I'd say it's a must win, but it's pretty darn close.
Curtis, we talked about it earlier. San Jose's big guns have been excellent. Joe Thornton's been really good. Joe Pavelski obviously almost won the game for the San Jose Sharks. Logan Couture has been excellent with 12 points in 9 games in the playoffs. And obviously Brent Burns on the back end leading the team with 13 points. But do you think also it's going to be imperative that some of the secondary scorers for the San Jose Sharks, whether that's a Patrick Marleau, whether that's a Thomas Hertl or a Matt Nieto, need to contribute in order for this team to close out the series?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point. I mean, I think that, you know, we've been waiting for a guy like Hertl to really kind of break out and start to assert himself in this series. It hasn't really happened yet. Some other depth guys, maybe like a Jonas Donskoi, he's had a great rookie year, has been, you know, you've noticed him out there from time to time, but he's definitely not quite as effective now as he was in the first round against the Kings. And you mentioned Patrick Marleau. He did not have a great game four. I thought game three he played pretty well. Game four was maybe not his best, but you know, the bottom line is, I mean, the Sharks had opportunities to win game four. They just didn't bury him. I mean, Couture had a great chance there. Hertl went on the breakaway. Not quite a breakaway, but basically was in all alone and Rene couldn't put it away. So they've had chances, and I think as long as they kind of keep creating those kind of chances, they should be okay. But you're right. I mean, depth scoring, if you're going to go not just past this round, but obviously get to the cup final, you're going to need everybody on board. And so far, it's been there from time to time, but not enough for them to feel real comfortable about getting all the way to the cup final this year.
Curtis, we talked about in the show earlier about pressure and the pressure that the San Jose Sharks face maybe now as compared to early in the playoffs against the Los Angeles Kings, who many picked, including myself, picked to win that series. You beat the Kings, you're the Sharks, and you beat the Kings, you know, fairly easily in five games, and then you take a 2-0 lead on Nashville. How much of a factor has pressure been on this squad, going from maybe very little pressure, at least outside of that dressing room, to a lot more pressure and expectations when up 2-0 in the second round?
Well, I think it's a good point. I mean, because you're right. I mean, expectations for the team before the playoffs began were, okay, it's going to be a good series against the Kings, but the Kings are going to win, kind of like they've done the last couple of times they've played the Sharks. And, you know, sure, yeah, it'll be exciting and it'll be entertaining, but really it's the Kings are the better team and going to move out of them, and then wham, you know, the Sharks win in five, and all of a sudden I saw, whoa, maybe this team's a little bit better than we thought. And then they go ahead and, yeah, take a 2-0 lead against the Predators, even though those two games, especially game two, you really saw the Predators kind of come, kind of turn it on a little bit. You kind of figured that they were going to be a little bit different challenge than LA was. But you're right. I mean, you've got to a point now where expectations are high, where they weren't high, you know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I mean, you can see how this group kind of deals with that. I think there are enough veterans in that team to be able to handle it. Nashville obviously has a ton of experience there too. So, kind of interesting to see how the Sharks handle it, especially considering, you know, this is a team that's basically built to win now. They're not building for the future. They're building to win right now. So, if it gets to them, you know, I don't know if it will, but, certainly there's going to be a lot of pressure to win tonight and then close out the series, in game six.
Curtis, we'll let you go on this last question. Game one between the Sharks and the Predators, a disappointing non-sellout in San Jose, ending a good streak of home playoff sellouts. You know, game two, obviously, I think they did sell it out. Is that just that game one expected to be an aberration as opposed to the rule going forward?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of an aberration, although there have been a lot of empty seats at the arena this year for various reasons. Game one was a little bit tricky because they didn't quite know who their opponent was going to be until 2 days before. And, you know, the Sharks came into the season with basically about 12,000 season tickets. There's about a 10 or 15% drop from the year before after they missed the playoffs. So, I mean, there's just a lot more tickets available. When you go into a playoff series, like, you don't know who your opponent's going to be or when exactly the first game's going to start. Until a couple days before, then it's a bit of a challenge for the front office to sort of catch up with that. But, so I would expect, you know, more or less, you know, I expect sellouts for the rest of the season, but I'm not 100% sure. But at the same time, it is a little disappointing, I guess, to not see, full houses there, you know, all season long, especially for that game one. But I do tend to think it's going to be pretty much a solid sellout for him here on out.
Curtis, just make sure that Burns and Thornton keep those beards going, because they've gotten this far, so they got to keep they got to keep that facial hair going.
Oh, I think Burns for sure. I think Joe, as soon as the season's over, I think that might get trimmed down a little bit, but we'll see.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us, and enjoy tonight's Game 5. It should be a dandy between the Sharks and the Preds.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Curtis. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss a 26-year-old that is doing much more with his life than you were at 26. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com and follow them on Twitter @BellAcres. And stay tuned, it's going to come up soon. information about the Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. So if you ever wanted to golf with some real golf pros, and if you ever wanted to golf with Illegal Curve, that opportunity is going to come up with you. More details coming up in the coming week. Stay tuned to here and on our Twitter feed for more information about the Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. Gentlemen, the Arizona Coyotes have a new general manager. He is 26-year-old John Chayka. Here is Mr. Chayka giving his introductory remarks at the press conference on Thursday.
You know, this is an exciting day for me, an exciting opportunity, and one that I'm very grateful for and humbled. I realize the high expectations of this group and have every intention on delivering on my part of the partnership, which is delivering a winning and sustainable winner that this ownership group deserves. It's an exciting time to be a part of the Arizona Coyotes. The positives are endless with respect to the vision and direction of our ownership group, to the influx of young, talented players that are going to excite our fans for years to come. But the end goal is very clear. It's to create a winning environment and destination that players want to play in. And again, that starts with winning. This is about the players and creating a model that's player-centric. All excuses will be eliminated. We expect to be successful. We'll be disciplined, pragmatic, and exhaustive in our approach to improving this team, and look forward to reaching our ultimate goal of winning a Stanley Cup. Thank you.
John Chayka, the 26-year-old new general manager of the Arizona Coyotes. You know, your thoughts on this hire? I mean, to have the youngest GM in NHL history, limited experience because he's only 26 years old. So is this going to be it's obviously a bold decision by the Coyotes ownership. Do you think this is something that's going to end up backfiring, or do you think that this is a new wave of the future with he's the founder of an analytics company, a hockey analytics company, sort of taking, this is they're at the forefront now of, I guess, hockey and analytics and player evaluation and everything like that?
Well, he sounded nervous there. I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's a big spotlight for a guy who's been spoken about and who's expected to be named the GM. I have no problem with the hire. I don't care if he's 26, 22, or 42. If he can bring attributes to the table, great. I think, Drew, when you talk about it being at the forefront of the analytics stuff, I mean, they're probably in one of the teams that is advanced in that respect. I'm sure there's a bunch of other teams that haven't been as open about it who are also quite advanced in that respect. The other thing is, we don't know yet if he's making decisions. I mean, he's going to be taking part in decision-making, in the decision-making process. We haven't yet seen the plan that they have in place and how it's going to be affected. So is Dave Tippett calling the shots with input from Chayka? Is Chayka calling the shots? Is there owner who's presiding over as kind of the boss, like Drummond, Gary Drummond, over the player personnel decisions? Is how much of a say does he have?
Sure.
We're seeing a little bit more of a, theoretically, a collaborative environment there in Arizona. But we don't know what that really means yet. So I have no issue with the hire. He's going to bring some good attributes to the table, it appears. I don't know much about him aside from what I've read and heard. But we don't yet know, is there going to be one guy in that core who's calling it more than the other? Is it going to work seamlessly? There's myriad options here.
Well, you mentioned Dave Tippett. He's the Coyotes head coach. He signs a 5-year contract extension and will take on more responsibilities with regard to personnel decisions, player personnel decisions, similar to Patrick Waugh in Colorado, who has a say at the table about the players that he's coaching.
Which really is it's kind of come full circle. Mm-hmm. Because Pat Quinn and guys like that used to call the shots both ways. And then you found the responsibility of the manager to be too much.
Sure.
And then you had to choose one or the other.
GM or coach.
The last one you saw in the NHL was Daryl Sutter doing both, and it was just far too much. And he struggled as a general manager and has proven to be a tremendous coach.
When he was still with the Flames.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you look at it that way, and it's interesting that it goes back to that. Now you have more help than you did before, and there's so many more rules, and there's so much more that goes into it, and the ownership is at the forefront here. But it's hard to say, Ezzy. I mean, what if the owner who's part of this process has certain things that he wants to do? Well, you pay the bills, you make the calls.
Right.
So it's hard to say. And Dave Tippett gets emotional about a player, and he's a good coach. He gets emotional. Because Dave Tippett is a good coach, a really good coach, does not mean he will make a good general manager. Just looking back, I just mentioned a couple seconds ago about Daryl Sutter. He's a tremendous coach. He was a poor manager. Now, it doesn't mean that he won't be a good manager. It doesn't mean that he will be.
Right, and even though the Arizona Coyotes have a lot of good young players in the system, Dylan Strome, you know, they believe will be the future number one center of this team, right? Max Domi and Anthony Duclair had great rookie years last year, but, you know, the goaltending wasn't very good. And, you know, after Oliver Ekman-Larsson and a few defensemen, that defense is not very good. I mean, they certainly, I thought, did better than I expected. You know, I thought that they were going to be in contention for the number one overall pick, and they're not even going to get a top five pick.
Sure.
So, I mean, you got to give them credit. And Dave Tippett, I agree with Rich. I mean, Dave Tippett is one of the greatest coaches in hockey. I mean, there's a reason why he's been a coach in Arizona for so long. And he was great as a coach with Dallas. He was a great hockey player, too. If you remember, good forward. But when you're talking about this team, Rich, you know, John Chayka comes in, and you mentioned, you know, that Dave Tippett has been given this managerial role, and Gary Drummond is also going to be the president of hockey operations. But more so than that, he's going to have a significant role. He's not just coming in by himself, and you know the come up of John Chayka was very quick. 1 year as an assistant general manager, now he's the general manager. But I agree with Rich. When you look at all of the general managers across the league, and you know, you could start with some of the guys that have been GMs for the longest, a guy like, you know, Kenny Holland, he's probably not going to have anywhere close to the type of power that a guy like Ken Holland has in Detroit, where he's really calling all of the shots when it comes to player personnel decisions. But you know, to your point, I agree with Rich. I mean, he's 26 years old, and I realize there was a lot of jokes on Twitter about how young he is. You know, Remus is older than him and everything like that. But the reality is, you know, you've seen...
Is that something on Twitter people were talking about? Remus?
First off, Gord Stellick was, I believe, 27 or 28 years old.
He was 30 years old, but that was a different... I mean, that was the Leafs under Harold Ballard, which were epic disaster.
Fair enough.
That
wasn't
for a long time, is it?
Fair enough. Theo Epstein was young in baseball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anthopoulos was very young when he was hired by the Toronto Blue Jays. And whether you want to say those were excellent GMs, I think those were excellent GMs. I know Rich believes they were very good GMs, especially with the Blue Jays, you know, going far last year. And unfortunately, Anthopoulos losing his job. But the reality is, apparently, you know, I've never met or talked to him, you know, but I've heard that he's a very bright guy. And they believe that the work that he's done, you know, with his you know, analytics company and everything like that, they believe that, you know, he's the right guy for the job. And whether, you know, you heard that the Coyotes tried to bring in Les Jackson as well, and they couldn't bring in Les Jackson. And obviously, Dave Tippett
as an assistant general manager
they... And apparently, they're still going to hire an assistant general manager.
Somebody who's in the playoffs right now, apparently.
To Richie's point, I mean, there are going to be a lot of cooks in the kitchen here. So... you know, does that necessarily work? Well, in other instances, you remember Toronto didn't work out.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. The role of the veteran assistant general manager, is that hire almost as important as the hire of Chayka? You know, for obviously another voice at the table, but the experience he brings in personnel in the NHL and the relationships.
That's more so the relationships.
Yeah, because Chayka won't have had any relationships. I mean, it's an old boys club, the general managers and the executives in the NHL, and Chayka won't be in that group. Is that veteran assistant GM really playing that role more than anything else? I mean, that's why he's
amongst
more important.
His responsibilities will be that, yes.
Yeah, to just make sure that, you know,
foster relationships.
You know, evaluating players, you know, that are directly in front of you is one thing. But evaluating players and then having to negotiate trades and everything else is a separate ball of wax altogether. And that might be where Chayka's struggles are.
We don't know if they will be, but if you're an Arizona team banking on him as part of a management group, he'd like to help him as much as possible and put him in a position to succeed rather than, you know, one of those position, put him in position where he has a better chance of failing.
Sure.
Like, if you want to work to his strengths, right? So whatever his strengths, it appears analysis and thing, and you know, he's mentioned his analytics company and some other aspects that, and he seems like a bright guy, but you mentioned the lack of contact or maybe the lack of experience dealing with some of these people, so you want to bring in guys who are more comfortable and can open that door or have those conversations with the with the input from you as to what you want to do.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic to talk more about the hiring of John Chyka as Coyotes general manager. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number three, coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Sarah McClellan. Sarah covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Our pleasure, Sarah. We were talking about this last segment. What were you doing when you were 26 years old? Were you running a multi-million dollar organization like John Chyka is now?
No, I definitely wasn't. So he's kind of putting some of us to shame here by what he's been able to accomplish so far in his career.
He absolutely is doing that. I'd be hard-pressed to get up before noon when I was 26 years old, but that's a separate issue altogether. So, Sarah, this hiring, you know, sort of, you know, he'd been with the organization for a year already, and of course we know his background as the founder of a hockey analytics company. How surprised were you when you heard that John Chyka was going to be the guy in charge of the Coyotes going forward? You know, why was this the time right now for this really bold step and bold move in the Coyotes' history?
Well, you know, I think looking at how the league is you know, continuing to embrace analytics, and I think especially how the Coyotes, even before they named John Chyka as their GM, expressed an interest to kind of modernize their approach and think outside the box and kind of embrace maybe these tools that we haven't maybe heard other teams publicly come out and say, this is how we want to operate and find players and think about how we play. I think it kind of made sense maybe then that they would, you know, look at John as someone to kind of lead that pursuit and, you know, kind of be the forefront now of their front office team, because that's his specialty. Like you mentioned, he founded an analytics firm. He worked with that before the Coyotes. And so he just kind of has this background and affinity for looking at all ways possible to gain that competitive advantage and eliminating the possibility that something goes wrong. So I think from that perspective, you know, just kind of promoting him was something that, you know, you could see them doing. But also, when you look at the support staff that they've built around him now, I think that probably gives them more confidence that this was the right move to do. They obviously gave Dave Tippett as coach more of an increased role as executive vice president of hockey ops, and then they also named the president of hockey operations. So they kind of have this three-pronged team now, you know, leading their management team, and they plan to hire an experienced assistant GM to also work alongside John and Dave Tippett in this capacity. So I think once you look at, you know, how they want to operate moving forward and then combine that with creating, you know, like a support staff, a collaborative team that's going to be involved in all these decisions, I think that's what they were after ultimately.
Sarah, after Don Maloney was let go, was John Chyka always the guy, or did they look outside of the organization as well in their search for their next GM?
They did. They had about 10 to 12 candidates on their list, and they interviewed. You know, it wasn't just internal, it was external too. They were granted permission to speak to Les Jackson of the Dallas Stars. He's their assistant general manager. But that window closed before they were able to get any potential partnership worked out. You know, so they definitely did their homework on this. It was, you know, more than 3 weeks search that they took their time. But I think in the end, you know, they liked John's vision. They liked the skill set that he could provide as they tried to tap into these other resources to help them, you know, have success. And that's, you know, sports science. They want to look at nutrition. They want to look at psychology profiles and making sure that they're kind of unearthing every possible avenue, you know, to make sure that they're giving their players the best opportunities to succeed. And so You know, I know they did their homework, but it just, it came back to John at the end, ultimately.
Sarah, you look at, you know, how other teams approach the Coyotes. So if the Winnipeg Jets here in town want to speak to the Coyotes about a player, who are they calling when they reach out to the team?
I mean, that's the GM, so that's John. That would be, you know, John, fall under John Chyka's, you know, jurisdiction. And then after that, I think it becomes a discussion. I think Dave Tippett is in on that conversation. They'll bring in their president of hockey operations, Gary Drummond. So I think, you know, John is the point man on, you know, kind of the figurehead of who you reach out to. He's the general manager, so if you have a trade request or you want to talk about this player, he's probably the guy that you reach out to. But then it sounds like it's very much going to become a conversation amongst the entire staff and, you know, including everyone to find, you know, the best solution moving forward in their eyes. So, you know, I think that was something that they really stressed with this restructuring, is they wanted to be very much collaborative and cohesive. And especially with getting Tippett involved, she's the one behind the bench, you know, running this team day to day in terms of how they want to play, what they need to do to win each night. And so getting his viewpoint in there, I think, was important for them to really identify what he needs to help this team and franchise continue to go through this rebuild and, you know, eventually regain, you know, a playoff position.
You mentioned Gary Drummond, Director of Player Personnel. What can you tell us about Gary Drummond and his role in those decisions?
Yeah, he's going to kind of be like a liaison, I think, you know, between all levels of the organization. So he's obviously a co-owner as well, the alternate governor. But I think by being the president of hockey operations now, he's going to be in those conversations with Dave Tippett and John Chyka and kind of be, you know, someone who can communicate that information to the other owners, the other partners there in that group. He can also go, you know, communicate to the coaching staff and even some of the core players. If those are decisions or comments that need to get passed on, he's going to kind of be that in between to kind of carry the information. So it's not all on John Chyka's plate. It's not all on Dave Tippett's plate. I see him acting as someone who's kind of like that leader that can make sure everyone's on the same page and making sure everyone has the information that's needed, that's appropriate at that time.
Sir, I mean, If I look at it, you know, from afar, at least you cover the team on a daily basis. But I look at it from afar, and once you really get into the details of the role of each person in this new kind of organizational structure, it does kind of seem awfully similar to a regular team in that the general manager fields the calls, he consults with the coach of the team in usual cases to see what they believe the team needs, and then they run it by ownership prior to making a decision.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it. I think maybe it was just completely like outlining and defining these roles, because this was, you know, they didn't have these two titles for Dave Tippett as Executive Vice President of Hockey Operations and a President of Hockey Operations. These were titles that didn't exist before this in the Coyotes hierarchy. So I think, you know, it definitely was a point of purpose for them to make sure that this communication happens. And, you know, that's, I think in the previous regime, you know, with Don Maloney, that was something that they felt, you know, needed to be improved on. It sounds like, you know, they wanted communication and collaboration, and that's not to say that they didn't have that, because just like you said, you know, this is how a front office functions, but I think it was very important for them to outline that and you know, make sure ownership was in the loop and that there was a team making these types of decisions, and that just seems to be the vision that they have in this ownership group moving forward. And it's funny because this ownership group now has only been in place for almost 3 years. So I think now they've felt they have a couple seasons under their belt. They've identified what they want out of this franchise, how they want to organize it and direct it and operate it. And so I think that was also maybe a coming age moment for them, that, you know, this is how we want to operate now. We've got our feet wet. We know what to expect. So we'd like to have these types of positions in place. And like you said, they're not unusual titles by any means, but we'd like to make these positions, put them on paper and give titles so that people know these are the expectations.
Sarah McClellan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. She covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, obviously the Coyotes captain, very familiar to us here in Winnipeg. Shane Doan, he's, you know, 13 years older than the general manager now as he's approaching his 40th birthday. How is this hire being received by the players in the dressing room? Obviously, you know, the Coyotes have some young elements, you know, Max Domi. We know that Dylan Strome's going to come through there. There's some young players there. But, you know, from the players' perspective, how is this hiring being received?
Well, I haven't talked to any players about this yet. This is, you know, obviously just a few days old and everyone's kind of in their off seasons. But you know what? I think this was something that they probably got used to seeing John around last season and, you know, maybe even seeing some of the results of what he does. You know, he was someone who looked at the video and broke down the data and saw that and then, you know, parlayed that to the coaching staff and just tried to find unique ways to help the team. Anything different or off the wall that he thought that may work, he was providing that insight to Don Maloney and Dave Shippett. And so he was kind of a regular presence around the team, you know, last season as an assistant GM. And, you know, so I think they probably got used to seeing him around that in that perspective. But I know obviously John's age is something that, you know, it's unique to hire someone who's 26 to fill this type of position. He's the, you know, the youngest GM in NHL history. And I think he's probably the youngest in all of, you know, North American pro sports to ever take on this role. So I think obviously that's going to get talked about, but I think John sees it as an opportunity to use it to his advantage. Some of these players, he's very similar in age to, you know, especially some of the core players on this team. You think Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you know, Max Domi and Anthony Duclair, they're going to, you know, get 21, 22 years old. You know, Martin Hansel, these are players that he feels that, you know, I can relate to them. He played junior hockey. Obviously, he never made it to the NHL, but he thought of, you know, when I was a player, what did I need? What would I have liked to have had to, you know, get to that next level? And he feels that he can relate to them. So I think it'll be interesting to watch, and it's definitely unique. So to see that dynamic play out, I think that'll be something to watch once the season gets going and we kind of see everybody in their day-to-day, everyday role.
Sarah, John Chyka and Dave Tippett and Gary Drummond are obviously going to be focused on the draft. It's coming up at the end of June in Buffalo. They hold the 7th overall pick, the Arizona Coyotes do, and, you know, earlier before the season, many people thought that the Arizona Coyotes might hold the number one or certainly a top three pick. How aggressive do you think the Coyotes are going to be in trying to move up the draft? Because you heard that the Coyotes might be willing to move significant players off the roster to get Austin Matthews, who's, of course, from Arizona.
You know what? I don't think as much. You know, I think obviously there was the lottery. There was that possibility that maybe they would have, you know, landed in the top three or get that first overall pick. But I don't believe they're going to, you know, sabotage the franchise to try to get up there. And I mean, obviously the other end of that is you need a willing trade partner. And is Toronto really going to be willing to part with that pick? So I think, you know, the philosophy before John, before they made this change at GM was, you know, we're not going to go crazy for that number one pick in terms of, you know, moving in Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Like, he's an untouchable for this franchise, really, when you think about it, because of his role as a franchise defenseman. You don't get many of those easily. So, I don't think that priority has changed at all. I think that, you know, they're at 7th right now. I think that they can see what their options are, definitely, but they could get a very quality player, and it's particularly someone on defense maybe with that pick, because that's an area of need that they'd like to, you know, restock and bolster in the minors. Just their prospect pool, it's getting deep up front, but I think, you know, now it's time to maybe look at what options they can add on defense. So, you know, I don't see them doing anything crazy. I think obviously it was very intriguing to see that potential of an Austin Matthews who got interested in hockey and grew up going to Coyotes games, possibly, you know, uniting with the franchise. But I don't think they're going to sacrifice what they have in place as really strong franchise-type players for the potential to even, you know, get that type of deal going.
Final question for you, Sarah. You mentioned Austin Matthews growing up going to Coyotes games, some of which I assume were in you know, the Phoenix area, not in Glendale. Is the new ownership group's been in for a couple of years now, and there's been talk about moving back to the Phoenix Scottsdale area. Is there any update on that?
Yeah, that's something that continues to progress, and I think you know, they're still exploring where they can, you know, permanently play. They're obviously still going to be out of Gila River Arena in Glendale next season, but they hope to have some type of an arena announcement before the draft. So obviously that gives them, you know, another month and a half or so to try to figure out who they want to partner with. I think, you know, Tempe near the Arizona State University campus was, you know, long believed to be a very front runner of possibilities of where they could land. And I think now downtown Phoenix has probably edged itself more into the conversation. I know the two sides have had discussions lately and, you know, seeing, you know, the possibility there. So, yeah, maybe a return to Phoenix is on the horizon. We'll see. But, you know, that continues to progress. And we know where they're playing next season. It's about kind of figuring out that long-term solution for them in the Valley.
Sarah McClellan covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, really appreciate your time and insight into the Coyotes' hiring of John Chayka this morning.
Thanks. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Sarah. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Break. When we come back, we look at the Blues and the Stars series. Game 5 goes in about 13 minutes' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now Ben sends it across for Sharp. Sharp darts to the middle of the ice, hands it off on the far side. Tough angle shot, they score! What a shot up under the bar.
Cody Eakin.
Cody Eakin took a perfect pass.
That's Winnipegger Cody Eakin scoring in Game 4 of overtime to equal the Stars and Blues series at 2 games apiece. Game 5 starts in 10 minutes' time. An early start in Dallas between the Stars and the Blues. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Awards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. I just sent out a tweet on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. It's got more information. It's got a link you can follow to join Team Illegal Curve or to support Illegal Curve in this fantastic charity event coming up in slightly less than a month from now. Ezzy?
Yeah, I'm excited. We got less than a month here to go. I still haven't gotten an opportunity to head out on my bike, but I am going to get a bike ride in later this week. But yeah, very excited. We've already started to raise a lot of money here, and it's going to be tons of fun. Actually, a few people actually have mentioned that they're going to come out and ride with us. So it's going to be excellent.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that, of course. You know, a lovely thing for you to do is you can, you know, with your lady friend, you can go for a bike ride.
That's true, I can. And
quite a segue there, Drew. Wow.
Pretty good, eh?
Ron McLean's got nothing on you.
Yeah, you're going to make me awkward here.
No, you're making yourself awkward. I don't need to contribute to that at all.
I would like to wish a happy birthday to Naomi. It's her birthday today, so it's going to be a very good day. We're going to, you know, have a nice day, a nice Saturday summer day here. So yes, happy birthday, Naomi.
And Richie was able to Snapchat that entire happy birthday announcement. So Richie can send that out, and you know, to anybody who wants to share that live and in person.
But well done, Ezzy.
We echo Ezzy's birthday wish. Yes, a happy birthday to Naomi, celebrating her birthday today. Of course. Let's get into the Stars and the Blues series, a 2-2 series, sort of similar to the Sharks and the Predators to you guys, in that the Blues should be a little disappointed that they're not up by more, that it's tied and they're into a best of three, because they have been, again, they've been the better of the two teams in my mind in this series.
Game three, for sure.
Yeah.
Should they have won game two? I don't know. If Antoine Roussel stops taking stupid penalties, I think Dallas probably wins that game. I don't know. I think 2-2 is a fair, you know, again, Dallas didn't put their best foot forward in game three yet. But I have no issue. Maybe I'm being partial because I picked Dallas here, but I think 2-2 is a fair reflection. Dallas could have won the first two games. Their goaltending certainly been suspect, guys. Not a complete shock to us that it's been suspect. But aside from their dud in Game 3, it's been two overtime games. And the first goal was a one-goal game, right?
Yep.
Rich, three of the four games in the series have been one-goal games. We've obviously had the two overtime games. I agree with Rich. I mean, obviously, St. Louis won Game 3 6-1. And I did think that St. Louis was the better team at home in Game 4. But they aren't able to get that insurance goal. And Dallas comes back, and you know Dallas wins it in overtime. You know, hat tip to Winnipeg or Cody Eakin. You know, scores the goal early in overtime. You know, when you look at the Dallas Stars, and the Dallas Stars are not having trouble scoring goals. I mean, maybe in Game 3 they only got the one goal there, but really it's been the goalie carousel that has been the big problem here. And Lindy Ruff came out and said it in round one. He said that if one of our goaltenders are struggling, we have no hesitation in going to the other. And you know, Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, who we had on last week, just tweeted out that it looks like Kari Lehtinen is going to be the starter. It's not confirmed, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, Kari Lehtinen has got all the wins for this team in the playoffs here. And I think he has struggled at times, absolutely. But, you know, going into Game 5 late in the second round here, I think you got to stick with Kari Lehtinen. And if he struggles big time, like if he lets in three or four goals in the first period, maybe you go to Antti Niemi. But Niemi hasn't been very good.
Well, Niemi hasn't given the Stars anything. He hasn't, you know, sometimes you bring in your backup and you maybe think it's going to give you your team a jolt of electricity. Niemi has brought nothing to the table for the Stars these playoffs. And yet Lindy Ruff is, you know, doing the goalie dance. He's juggling the two of them. And I guess, you know, you can't really criticize him for it necessarily because they're 2-2 in the second round right now. But it's really remarkable that...
Without their best player.
Without their best player.
Jamie Benn's their best player.
Sure,
best
Tyler
player.
Seguin, you're right. Still without him. But it's amazing that, you know, in spite of this horrendous goaltending, I mean, it's really been that bad, that they're still able, that they're still, you know, right in the dogfight here.
They're a good team. And you're seeing that now in terms of the way that they're able to me, keep up with the St. Louis Blues, certainly keep up with them. I mean, they're a faster team. I think they're dictating pace for portions of the game. St. Louis is doing the same. It's a good battle. These are two really good teams.
Yep. And
you could certainly argue they're the two best teams remaining in the Western Conference, similar to the Eastern Conference, when you could argue the Capitals and Penguins are the two best teams remaining in the Eastern Conference. It's a bit of the catch you have with this new playoff system, is sometimes you get these top teams locked into the second round. Larry Brooks wrote about that last week, so I agree. But there's also benefits to it as well, and that'll balance out over time. The Dallas Stars, Drew, we talked about, you know, the strengths that they have, and you know, you've really seen Jason Spezza play well. Mm-hmm. Radek Faxet's been a coming out party. I mean, Joel Edmondson's gift pass last game, even without that, I mean, Fax has been a really good contributor here. And you think about the fact that we mentioned Sagan and Nikushkin has put up 0 points to have trouble getting in the lineup. You know, guys you thought might contribute haven't all contributed, but for the most part, they've had a pretty good performance from most of their players. And Jim Nill's done a nice job here adding in guys who can contribute. And we talked about the depth, no star guys, but the depth on the back end.
And this series, I think, is playing out exactly how we thought it was going to play out. Maybe the games haven't finished or the order of the wins haven't transpired, but I think Rich and I both expected this series to go to seven games. And, you know, the top players are excelling. Vladimir Tarasenko was excellent in the first round versus Chicago, and he's continued that. He almost had a hat trick in Game 4 versus the Dallas Stars. And Schwartz, Laterra, and Tarasenko continues to be an excellent line. But these two teams have depth at every position. And, you know, the difference between the St. Louis Blues team and the team in years past is you're even deeper. Like after Petrangelo, who I think has been excellent, and after Kevin Shattenkirk, and after Jay Bouwmeester, who has struggled at times, but those are your veteran defensemen. Colton Parayko, and Richie mentions Joel Edmondson, have done a really good job. And, you know, for St. Louis, Stastny Brouwer and Alex Steen has been an excellent line. And then when that line hasn't been able to pick up the offensive slack, you have Fabry, Berglund, and Backes there on the third line, with Backes getting the overtime goal in Game 2. So they're getting contributions from all lines. Richie mentioned, as far as Dallas goes, you know, the third line of Roussel, Faxa, and Hemsky, they've been putting the puck in the net. And Roussel has had some discipline issues in these playoffs, and that's
always in his career. Stars. Yeah,
he has had playoff issues here, but you know, the difference between these two teams is very negligible, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you saw both teams get power play goals in game four, but special teams can be a factor, and it will be a factor, I imagine.
Well, St. Louis's power play has been amazing.
St. Louis's power play has been amazing, but for the most part, I mean, you know, we mentioned it, 3 one-goal games out of the four. The teams are trading chances. I agree with Rich. At times, Dallas has dictated the pace. They're a faster team. Dallas, with the exception of maybe Washington and a few other teams, is the fastest team in the NHL. And, you know, they're doing this without Tyler Seguin. Jamie Benn's been excellent. I agree with Rich. I mean, Patrick Sharp had a goal and an assist in game four. He's been excellent. You know, Cody Eakin was at the third line center last year. You got to give Cody Eakin credit. He's a, I think if he was an underrated player before, I think people are starting to realize how good he is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Cody Eakin should be in the discussion for the World Cup roster for Canada and going forward the Olympic roster. I mean, this is a guy, how many guys can move from the third line and go up to the first line? I think he's an excellent player, you know, good at faceoffs, everything like that. But I mean, it's would any of us be surprised if there are another couple of games that go to overtime in this series?
No.
I mean, it's that close. And especially considering that, you know, the goaltending hasn't been excellent. Brian Elliott was better in the first round against Chicago.
Yeah, he can't let in that overtime goal, though.
No, and you know, that's a bad goal to give up. And I mean,
he's been great in the playoffs, but you can't let that go on.
No, you can't let it go. I mean, short side. I mean, he picks the corner, and I'm sure what he would say, you know, confidentially, privately, he'd say that it goes off the defenseman's stick, and that's what gives it the trajectory it gives it to go sort of bar down there. But you're right, it's a save you have to make, particularly in overtime, particularly when your team is, you know, in a dogfight and can take a stranglehold 3-1 lead on the series. Back to a best of three now.
But he's certainly not been a problem for them. He's one of the reasons that they're sitting where they are in the second round tied.
That's right. And so it'll be a best of three. Game five gets underway momentarily between the Stars and the Blues. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail, talk about some of the TV coverage that you've seen regarding this year's NHL playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Eleven 30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome. Good morning to you, too.
Dave, obviously, we brought you on.
Well, it's fitting that we have the Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, because we need to be tweeting out Dave. Dave's been doing some comedy routines, and we've got to tweet out the YouTube. Dave, I thought you did a good job. I watched it. I watched one of the clips. I thought you did a pretty good job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's two up there now. Absolute Comedy had me back for a real show. I guess they lost their mind or something.
Well, I've been around the comedy business for a lot of years now, Dave. So I know just how difficult it is to get up on stage. So all the praise in the world to you for taking that leap, because you're never quite as naked as you are standing on stage with you and a microphone and a room full of people, and you have to try and make them laugh, because that takes guts to even get up on stage. So kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is. It does get a bit lonely. I got dragooned into emceeing my hockey league's banquet last night because our league president decided to go on vacation at that time. And I'll tell you, I thought I was dying up there. There were not a lot of laughs, at least that I could hear. But the odd thing was, when it was over, all these people were coming up to me going, "That was great. That was grand." Well, why didn't you laugh?
That's right. It's all you want at that point in time is to hear the laughs. But, you know, like I said, kudos to you for that. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the playoffs and the TV coverage of the playoffs. And, you know, it was no laughing matter for anybody sort of Ontario East in Canada on Thursday night. They're sitting up. It's triple overtime. The clock strikes 2 in the morning Eastern time, and their cable box just shuts off to do an automatic update. You referred to it on the Globe and Mail today as a Heidi incident, going back to that old football game in the 70s where the people missed the ending of the game. You know, is that just sort of insult to injury to how these playoffs have been broadcast throughout the course of the first two rounds?
Well, yeah, that's the way it's worked out for Rogers. I mean, it wasn't intentional, but, you know, as a lot of people on Twitter made the point, what sort of, you know, cable box needs to be updated every freaking day, you know? And it was, I gather this, I'm not a Rogers customer, but I gather this particular box has been a headache for them, or more particularly the software they use on it. It's a PVR box, so not every single Rogers customer was affected, just the ones which I guess by now might be most of them. Okay. Because they introduced this box a couple of years ago, and then they introduced this software I guess last year sometime, and then updated it last summer, and people just, it seems anecdotally, they just hate it. It's the PVR software that you look at when you're trying to record and watch programs, and they say it's not user friendly at all, and was quite a bit different from the previous version. And for whatever reason, this thing needs to be rebooted. Why they picked 2 a.m., I don't know. More than one person pointed out on Twitter that 4 a.m. might have made more sense. There'd be fewer night owls, for one thing, and probably fewer games that would go into overtime that long.
Dave, obviously a lot of Winnipeg hockey fans were pretty excited last Saturday with the NHL draft lottery and the Winnipeg Jets getting the second overall pick. I guess a lot of people thought it might have gone to the Edmonton Oilers for the 15th year in a row. And those ratings came in, and I saw that you wrote about it earlier in the week for the Globe and Mail. What were your thoughts, not just about the ratings, pardon me, but just the way the draft lottery went? Because there were a lot of criticism, surrounding the draft lottery, the new rules this year.
Well, I mean, I can't blame the NHL for changing it around to the way it was done this year, because tanking just was getting to be a little too much of a habit for too many teams. And even though, you know, the prospect of the Edmonton Oilers, probably the most undeserving team in the land, getting the pick again, I mean, I just assumed they probably would. I figured nothing ever goes right for the Leafs, so I was quite surprised when they actually managed to get it. But in that instance, I can't blame the NHL too much. I do think, though, they opened it up a little too much. I think it was at least 10 teams had a legitimate shot at number one, didn't they, or some sort of shot. I mean, I can't really remember now, but it would seem to me that, you know, you might want to limit that to maybe the lowest five or so. But, you know, and tanking's always going to be an issue, I think. And it certainly was, I wasn't surprised at the ratings it got. Something around, was it 1.5? Was it 5 or 6 million?
1.5, yeah.
And because, you know, it was a 1 in a million draft lottery, in that every one of the 7 Canadian teams had a chance in that thing, so I knew it would get a big audience. I suppose it's a little embarrassing for Rogers that fewer people watched the Washington Pittsburgh game right after it. It was about 100 more, I think, a little over 100,000 or maybe 200,000 fewer viewers switched out on average, and that's, you know, I mean, it's not Rogers' fault, but that's a little odd to me, in that you had Ovechkin and Crosby going at it. I would have thought that audience should have been closer to 2 million, but I guess what's happened is because all of the Canadian teams missed the playoffs, people tended to, you know, and the ratings showed it, they tuned out early in the first round, and so once that happens, it's, you know, they tend not to come back, I guess.
Dave, a question I have, and it seems like the NHL does this annually, really, and it's different than the NBA. You know, you look at happened on Thursday, but coming up on Monday here, you have Dallas-St. Louis Game 6 and Nashville-San Jose Game 6. So they're both going to be elimination games. And one game starts at 8 o'clock Eastern, one game starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. Why don't they stagger the games so the fans can watch two games back-to-back, even if it's a bit of an inconvenience for the local fans to go an hour later or an hour earlier to a game?
That's a good question. I don't know why they don't do it. I'm assuming because the NHL is still pretty much a gate-driven league, that and you know, in some of the cities in the U.S. where the fan commitment isn't as strong, they probably don't want to run the risk of annoying the local fans too much, especially considering some of the prices they pay for playoff hockey. I mean, that's the best guess I can come up with.
Dave Schultz is our guest on the Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, you know, it's been well documented that, you know, the TV ratings are down significant during this playoff run. Not really a surprise, of course, given that there's seven Canadian teams and none of them are active in the playoffs this year. Is there anything that Sportsnet or Rogers could have done in your mind to mitigate the impact on the lack of Canadian teams in the playoffs and the impact it's had on its ratings? Or were they, you know, dealt a sort of a lousy hand and they just have to try and work through it as best as possible this year?
Well, Rogers has made a fair number of mistakes along the way, but they've also had the worst luck you'd ever want to see. And I think in this instance, this is one, you know, there really wasn't much they could do. All seven Canadian teams are out, and you just knew, well, there goes your, you know, prime TV audience. So I really don't know what more they could have done outside of sending, I don't know, troops out into the land to force people in front of their TVs. But, yeah, this is just something they're going to have to, you know, live with this spring anyway.
Dave, you look at the World Championships, usually it's an afterthought, but you mentioned seven Canadian teams, all the interest in the draft lottery now with all those some of those prospects, playing over in the World Championships. Do you expect a boost in ratings because of the interest in, say, Toronto?
I think you'll see a bit of a bump. I'm not expecting a huge one because there's still the problem that the games are on during the day. Although, you know, the diehards will find a way to watch them, you know. But, yeah, if those games were on prime time, and if the tournament was over here, I would think, yeah, they'd get a pretty good bump. But, they'll for daytime programming, they're going to get a good audience for TSN, but I don't think it's going to. I'd be quite surprised if they rival the sort of numbers that Rogers is getting, even for, you know, this reduced interest playoffs.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question, and you know, we talked about the bad hand that Rogers has been dealt. Their use of local broadcasts in the first round in particular sort of raised eyebrows right across the hockey world. You know, were they telling their audience that you don't need to care as much because we don't care to even send a broadcast crew on the road to cover this game? Is that the impression that the audience should have taken by some of those decisions?
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, this is one of the mistakes Rogers did, and I think this was solely a cost-cutting move. They're really getting squeezed by, you know, the fact they're paying all this money to the NHL. They're not getting the advertising revenue they expected, not anywhere close to it. And so they're under a great deal of pressure, they being Rogers Media, under a great deal of pressure from, the very top guy, Lawrence, the CEO, and the board to each division has to pull its own weight. So they're, you know, having to cut costs. That's why you saw a guy like Gord Cutler, who was basically in charge of the hockey for Rogers. He got fired, right? And the shocking part of that was right on the eve of the playoffs. So there's huge pressure to cut costs, and it costs roughly $100,000 to send a crew on the road to produce, you know, a per game, that is, to produce a series. So if you cut out a couple of series in the first round and in the second round, you can probably save a couple million dollars if all those series that, you know, you were planning to cover went seven games. So, yeah, it's all to save money, and yeah, it does send the wrong message to the fans.
Dave, I lied. One more question. You mentioned Gord Cutler being dismissed right before the playoffs. Is this going to be a summer of some upheaval in your mind for the way they broadcast the NHL? Do you expect there to be more changes, either forward facing that the audience will notice or behind the scenes?
Yes, on all counts, and that's simply because everybody over at Rogers, like all the staffers, they're expecting that to happen. There's really a huge amount of concern on the part of people on staff there in the hockey department that there'll be more cutbacks this summer, and there will be some changes to the show itself, because I would think firing Gord Cutler in itself is not a completely a financial move. There might have been a little of finance to it, but to me, the overriding signal that sends is that the people on high, and by on high, I mean up around Guy Lawrence and the board of directors level, there must be something they are quite unhappy about in the way the hockey is being produced and shown, and I think that shows that there's going to be some changes that even the viewers will notice.
More importantly, Drew, when are we flying Dave in to do a three-night set at Rumors Comedy Club?
Yes. Well, next time you make it down to Winnipeg, let me know, and we'll get you on stage at Rumors. How about that, Dave?
I am available anytime.
Well, we'll keep that in mind. Dave Schultz is a columnist for the Globe and Mail. Dave, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us here on The Illegal.
You're quite welcome, guys. It was my pleasure.
Take care, Dave. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll tell you who the Hart Trophy nominees are this year in the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. A big thank you to everybody who joined us as guests. Dave Schultz, the Globe and Mail just now. Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic. George Johnson, Calgary sports columnist. And of course, right off the top of the show, or earlier on in the show, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Just announced the three nominees for the Hart Trophy. No surprise, really. Patrick Kane, Sidney Crosby, and Jamie Benn are your three nominees for the Hart Trophy this year. I think it's probably safe to say that Patrick Kane is going to end up as the winner of that.
Yes, Patrick Kane will end up the winner of that. I think it's quite not surprised, but pretty incredible that the questions were, is Sidney Crosby on his way down, on the downside of his career? Or is he not the
truly.
Same? Is he not as the way, and Drew, that was the question people, a lot of people are asking, yeah. Is that the, you know, is he in a situation now where he's not the player he was 6-7 years ago, and boom, second half of the year, he's dominant, absolutely dominant, and then he ends up being in the top three for the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, I think we all expect Patrick Kane to win the Hart Trophy, but as far as I'm concerned, Sidney Crosby is not a far second. Like, Patrick Kane had that great point streak, right?
You think Crosby be ahead of Ben?
Well, you know what? Jamie Benn deserves all of these. I mean, these are three of the best players in the NHL, right?
Yes.
And you could make an argument other players could have been nominated as well. I don't think anybody was going to argue with Kane or Crosby. I mean, I think Braden Holtby could be a guy that you could put in there. I think even a guy like Brent Burns had a phenomenal season for San Jose.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people thought Joe Thornton would be ahead of Brent Burns, and even Alex Ovechkin with his 50-goal season, I think you could include him in there, Drew. There are a lot of good players you can include in there. But yeah, I do, Rich. Crosby, you mentioned the poor start that he had, but I mean, he proved that he is still an elite player in this league, and he will be for many years to come. So if I had a vote, which I don't, I would vote for Sidney Crosby. I really would.
Really?
I think too often, Drew, these awards, and I've said this before, and I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I think often these awards go to the player who has the most points. I've said again and
that's
again,
fair.
Drew,
that's fair.
Drew Doughty is a better defenseman than Erik Karlsson. Yeah. And Erik Karlsson, I think, has won the Norris Trophy a few times here because he gets the most points. I don't think that's the way it should be.
I don't quibble with your argument that too often it just goes straight by points and you know, score sheet performance, but this season, given the disparity between Patrick Kane and everybody else, a 17-point difference. He's the only 100-point scorer in the league. I mean, I think it has to be Patrick Kane, but I appreciate your respect your argument.
I think Patrick Kane will win.
Okay.
But I'm saying that if I had the vote,
yeah,
I would vote for Crosby.
Very
That's
good.
All I'm saying.
I understand that completely. Want to give a shout out, of course, Brandon Wheatking's big 3-2 overtime victory in game one of the Western Hockey League finals last night. They're playing the Seattle Thunderbirds. Game two goes at the Westman Center in Brandon tonight. So go Wheaties as they're up 1-0, looking to take a 2-0 lead before that series heads back to Seattle for the next three. Drake Cajula. You know him from the University of North Dakota. He is set to sign with the Edmonton Oilers. He is an undrafted free agent, was free to sign with any team. The finalists were the Oilers, the Canucks, and the Senators. Apparently, the Oilers end up getting Drake Cajula. Your thoughts on Cajula as a player and how he'll fit in with the Edmonton Oilers?
A little bit surprised he chose Edmonton over Vancouver, only because it appears there would be more immediate opportunity in Vancouver. That said, I can understand why he selects Edmonton. It has a ton of young, skilled forwards who I guess he thinks can complement his game. I'd expect him to likely stay on the left side there, Drew, and they have McDavid and they have Draisaitl and they have Nugent Hopkins. So there's no lack of players who can get him the puck and create offense. His game reminds me a little bit of Dougie Waite, the former Oiler. Not to the same level. Dougie Waite was a tremendous player, but some of the strengths of his game and size is an issue, but he's a smart player. He can find the open guy and he can create offense. So there won't be, you'd hope that, in terms of his development, there wouldn't be as much pressure on him because of how many young players with expectations there are there. But I certainly like the signing from Edmonton. There's absolutely no downside, and the player has some upside for sure.
Yeah, he's a really good player. Rich and I both saw him play for UND, national champions, of course, and he really took a step forward. He's one of their top players last year, but he scored 25 goals for UND, and he was on their top line and a big part of the reason why they won the national championship. So Edmonton's getting a really good player. I was actually a little bit surprised that Toronto wasn't involved more, because he is from Ontario, and Toronto going young, and they're in need of good young players. But it appeared that Vancouver and Edmonton were his preferred choices. So he's a free agent, 4 years at UND, and he can choose wherever he wants to go, right? So Edmonton's certainly getting a really good player, and he's smaller, but he's able to manage himself very well in traffic. He's got a really good shot, pretty speedy guy too. So another good player for the Oilers.
Young, cheap talent that only costs you money is something that every team in the NHL should be after and trying to get their hands on. I mean, we saw how impactful it was for the Blackhawks this year with Panarin. Cost them relatively nothing in terms of assets and just some cash, and well, we know how good he was. Jagr re-signs with the Panthers. It's a one-year contract for $4 million. The ageless wonder just keeps on going.
By the way, he's also got bonuses that can push it up to
five and a half million. I think the bonuses are worth another $1.5 million.
It's pretty incredible. For a guy who's turning 44 years old,
yeah,
and he can make $5.5 million. It's incredible. Nobody surprised, Drew. Jagr might play until he's 50 years old. He was a top scorer for the Panthers this year. Slowed down in the playoffs, but I think that's been too much has been really written about that, Rich. I really don't think that was the main reason why the Panthers lost. I mean, the Panthers, let's be honest, Luongo wasn't Luongo. And, there were some injuries there with Trocheck, missed a few games there. So, I mean, it's great to see, though. I mean, the fact that hockey fans, and we were down in Florida when Jagr tied Brett Hull's record and then passed it.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you're getting to watch one of the greatest goal scorers in history, I think is just great for the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's Jaromir Jagr.
Not much downside there, right? 1 year deal.
Right, exactly.
You're not going to give him 2 years.
No, I mean, if he slows down a little bit, the other players will step up because they're only getting better. So it's the perfect sort of transition at that point in time. Last one, Antti Raanta signs a 2-year contract extension with the Rangers. 2 years, $2 million.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Antti Raanta, he must really like it in New York because...
Antti Raanta or Antti Raanta?
Antti Raanta, excuse me. He must really like it in New York because I thought that was a discount deal.
$1 million for a pretty good backup goaltender. Seems like he could have shopped his wares a little bit.
At least see. I mean, I think he could have at least got 1.5.
Richie, what do you think of Uncle Raanta?
It's too easy.
Yeah. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on our website, illegalcurve.com, and like I said, on tsn1290.ca. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. A big thank you to Corey, doing a great job behind the glass, of course, getting us on and off the air, making us sound as good as we do. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball coming up next here on TSN 1290.